The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The People's Pharmacy, King Features. Castor oil mix got rid of a bumpy skin spot. Question. I use castor oil mixed with baking soda to treat a prominent actinic keratosis that it had for years. It was gone after 2 days and hasn't come back. 2 years later, I can't remember where I heard about this remedy, but others want to know about it. Answer. Actinic keratoses are precancerous skin lesions. They are common on aging skin that has been exposed to ultraviolet radiation from the sun and may feel scaly or rough. All such spots should be seen by a dermatologist as they can be an early form of skin cancer. We could not find any published studies of this remedy, but it seems benign. If it doesn't work, the dermatologist can use a more standard approach. Question. When is a good time to take melatonin? Typically, I go to bed at 10:30 p.m. and read for an hour before lights out. I often awaken at 1 or 2 a.m. and can't fall back to sleep. Answer. Melatonin appears to be most helpful if taken 30 minutes to an hour before sleep. Although melatonin could help you fall asleep more quickly, and that's cited in Neurological Research, June 2017, we don't know whether it will help you stay asleep. A prolonged release formulation might be useful for that purpose, and that's cited in Expert Opinion on Pharmacotherapy, April 2012. Question. I have restless legs syndrome, which keeps me awake at night unless I take a magnesium supplement at bedtime. This gives me excellent results. On the rare occasion that I get that creepy, crawly feeling anyway, I rub magnesium oil on my lower legs, and this helps almost immediately, and I am able to go back to sleep. Answer. Many people report that magnesium supplements can help with insomnia, RALS, which is restless leg syndrome, and leg cramps. Unfortunately, we found only one uncontrolled study on magnesium therapy for restless leg syndrome cited in Sleep, August 1998. In this open, quote-unquote, study, people with RALS or a related problem, periodic limb movement during sleep, took magnesium supplements and found them beneficial. We wish scientists had followed up. One important warning. People with limited kidney function must not take supplemental magnesium. It could overwhelm the kidneys and build up to dangerous levels. It isn't clear whether topical magnesium oil would provide enough to be dangerous, but it wouldn't make sense to push the envelope. Can ketamine anesthesia reverse depression? Question. When I broke my leg a few years ago, I needed surgery to reset the bone correctly. The anesthesiologist gave me intravenous ketamine to put me to sleep. As I was recovering from the amnesia, I experienced an amazing change in my mood, like a cloud lifting from my brain. I have suffered from depression almost all of my life. It is cyclical and has not responded to medication for almost 50 years. The antidepressant effect of ketamine seemed to last. I have tracked my depression carefully for decades. During my next down cycle, the depression was much reduced. I started researching this unusual response and discovered that ketamine has been administered off-label for this very purpose. I would like to get another injection of ketamine in the hope that I will continue to get an antidepressant benefit. Is that possible? Answer. The ketamine, and the brand is Ketalar, story is fascinating. This injectable anesthetic has been available for almost 50 years. you discovered by accident an unusual benefit of ketamine. Years ago, Japanese anesthesiologists performed a controlled experiment with ketamine during orthopedic surgery, cited in Anesthesia and Analgesia, July 2002. They found that this anesthetic helped ease their patients' depressed mood and suicidal tendencies. Since then, there have been many other studies confirming an antidepressant effect of ketamine. The Food and Drug Administration recently approved a slightly different version of this medication called Spravato, which is S-ketamine. It is administered as a nasal spray for treatment-resistant depression. The cost can be daunting, however, at over $2,000 a month. Some psychiatrists are using ketamine infusions or nasal sprays off-label to help patients with hard-to-treat depression. Question: I just got my annual thyroid test results. My doctor said my thyroid function was low normal, whatever that means. I feel sluggish most days. I can barely get going in the morning. I have gained about 10 pounds that I cannot shed despite cutting back on portions. Is it possible that I need to up my dose of levothyroxine to be more normal? Quote unquote. Answer: it is possible, but you will need to work with your doctor on this. The thyroid gland is a tiny but mighty, at least when it comes to functioning, or at least when it's functioning properly. It regulates metabolism and has an impact on every tissue in the body, from your brain to your toenails. An underactive thyroid gland can make you feel lethargic and can interfere with your ability to exercise and lose weight. FDA acknowledges withdrawal itch. Question: I have taken Zyrtec daily for over 4 years to manage animal and seasonal allergies. I recently went on vacation and did not take Zyrtec during that time. I was away from the allergy sources after all. After a few days off the medicine, I developed a sudden and excruciating itching. Oddly, it felt like it came from within my body rather than on the surface. The itch started in my inner thighs and spread to my sides and back. Luckily, I went online and searched the reactions I was having. My symptoms matched those of others who stopped Zyrtec suddenly. Once I realized this was a withdrawal reaction, I took a Zyrtec pill. Within the hour, the itching stopped. Now I'm afraid to ever stop taking Zyrtec. Answer: readers of this column alerted us to this withdrawal phenomenon nearly a decade ago. At that time, cetirizine, which is Zyrtec, was available only by prescription. The prescribing information did not warn about a withdrawal itch reaction. The Food and Drug Administration has now acknowledged that many people experience unbearable itching, or pruritus, when they stop cetirizine suddenly. Cited in Therapeutic Advances in Drug Safety, July 5, 2019. According to the report, quote, some patients described the itch as so intense that it impacted their ability to work, sleep, or perform their normal daily activities, unquote. The agency now requires a warning about this withdrawal reaction and the prescribing information for both cetirizine and its chemical cousin, the levocetirizine, or Zyzal. As far as we can tell, however, this alert is not included in the over-the-counter labels. Question: I take sildenafil, or Viagra, for erectile dysfunction. It works quite well, but not long after taking it, I experience pretty unpleasant heartburn. Needless to say, this interferes with the romantic mood. Do you have any recommendations? Answer: all of the erectile dysfunction drugs, sildenafil, tadalafil, and vardenafil, like aka Viagra, Cialis, and Levitra, can cause heartburn as a side effect. They work by relaxing smooth muscle that lines the blood vessels going into the penis. However, smooth muscle elsewhere in the body, such as that in the lower esophageal sphincter in the digestive tract, also relaxes in response to these drugs. That promotes acid reflux. Ask your doctor whether taking an antacid like Tums or Rolaids along with your Viagra might relieve the heartburn. Change in diet lowered blood sugar. Question. About 12 years ago, I was diagnosed with prediabetes since my HbA1c was 6.8. I started measuring my blood sugar and changed my diet. No sweets, beer, or wine. My wife asked me to measure her blood glucose because she was always thirsty. It was 260 and her HbA1c was 13.6. We went on a rigorous diet with no bread, rice, potatoes, macaroni, fruit juice, or ice cream. We focused on vegetables, fruit, and some meat. We both lost weight. We measure our blood sugar to determine what's good and what's not. We also figured out that eating food with high fructose corn syrup is like eating poison for both of us. After about 6 months, her A1C was under 7, and mine was 6.4. Today, hers is 6.3 to 6.4, and mine 6 to 6.3. Answer. You are living examples of how following a sensible diet and losing weight can help regulate blood sugar. Some experts concur that high fructose intake can make diabetes harder to control, and that's cited in Mayo Clinic Proceedings, March 2015. Question. I've recently started using aloe vera gel for mosquito bites. It stops the itch immediately. I was desperate since I had multiple bites on my legs. There's no odor or color. If I understand correctly, aloe vera is actually good for your skin. Answer. Aloe vera has a long history of medicinal use, going back as far as ancient Egypt. The clear gel from the center of the leaf has antioxidant and anti-inflammatory properties and may protect the skin. That's cited in Phytomedicine, June 20, 2019. Scientists have studied it as a complementary treatment to help heal wounds and prevent skin ulcers. And that's cited in Iranian Journal of Medical Sciences, January 2019. We haven't seen any research on its benefits against mosquito bites, though. Perhaps if others try it, they will report on how well it works for them. Question. I have been following a ketogenic diet for several months and have begun to notice a strong underarm body odor. None of the usual antiperspirants have worked. I found wiping my armpits with original formula Sea Breeze is working. Answer. Sea Breeze, astringent original formula, contains water, denatured alcohol, a number of herbal extracts, the preservative sodium benzoate, and coloring. We assume that the benefits you've noticed come from the herbal ingredients, camphor, peppermint oil, clove oil, eucalyptus oil, and eugenol, also from cloves. Perhaps they affect the microbes that thrive on the skin under your arms. From the Harvard Health Letter, the risk of inactive ingredients in everyday drugs. Allergic reactions or gastrointestinal distress are possibilities. Your prescription pills contain more than just active ingredients to treat your medical condition. They're also full of inactive ingredients, additives with many jobs, such as helping keep a pill in its shape. Many of these inactive ingredients have the potential to cause adverse reactions, according to a Harvard study published March 13, 2019, in Science Translational Medicine, Anatomy of a Pill. Researchers combed through several vast databases and found the average pill or capsule contains about 9 inactive ingredients, although the range is 0 to 35. Why so many? Formulation is an art, and you may need numerous components for a medication to work well and have the full effects, says Dr. Giovanni Traverso, one of the authors of the study, as well as a gastroenterologist and biomedical engineer at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. Inactive ingredients serve many purposes. For example, artificial sweeteners such as aspartame and saccharin are used to mask a bitter taste. Fatty acids help promote the absorption of a drug. Lactose and other sugars bind ingredients together. Polysaccharides or vitamin E extend a drug's shelf life. Polymers keep some opioid pills, such as oxycodone or OxyContin, from being dissolved, a step to prevent medications from being abused. By the time drug makers add all of the necessary components, the inactive ingredients make up 3/4 of the typical pill, Dr. Traverso notes. Inactive ingredient intolerance. While inactive ingredients play an important role in the formulations, they may also cause adverse effects. The most common risk stems from intolerances to ingredients known as FODMAPs, that's FODMAPS, which stands for fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. They are sugars found in certain foods, such as milk and dairy products, wheat, rye, onions, garlic, legumes, honey, pistachios, cashews, asparagus, and artichokes, that can be difficult to digest and can cause gastrointestinal symptoms such as gas, bloating, and diarrhea. The researchers found that 55% of all oral medications contain at least one FODMAP, especially mannitol, polydextrose, or lactose. Lactose, for example, was found in all available formulations of the cholesterol-lowering drug rosuvastatin, such as Crestor, and also in all versions of the pain reliever Diclofenac, such as Voltaren. About 65% of the world's population has difficulty digesting lactose. Allergic reactions, a rare but potentially life-threatening risk from some inactive ingredients, is an allergic reaction. Researchers found 38 inactive ingredients that were potential allergens, such as peanut oil, chemical dyes, and gluten, a protein found in wheat, barley, and rye. Scientists also found that 93% of the pills or capsules they looked at contained at least one potential allergen. For example, 1/3 of the medications contained chemical dyes such as tartrazine, often cited on labels as yellow 5, linked to adverse reactions. All the progesterone capsules tested contained peanut oil, which is extremely dangerous for people with peanut allergies. How bad are the reactions to these inactive ingredients? You may just have a rash, or you may have an extreme reaction like trouble breathing, says Dr. Traverso. For people with celiac disease, consuming anything with gluten, even a pill, triggers the immune system to attack the small intestine, causing inflammation and leading to malnutrition and gastrointestinal distress. Spiking the risk. The risk for adverse reactions to inactive ingredients increases with polypharmacy, a term doctors use to describe the use of multiple medications. Researchers say that 39% of Americans ages 65 or older take at least 5 prescription drugs per day. The more pills you take, the more inactive ingredients you're ingesting. The study found that a person taking 10 medications daily ingests an average of almost 3 grams of inactive ingredients per day. That could be a real problem if you're allergic to or intolerant of some of the additives. For example, you may be taking 10 different pills, and the total amount of lactose may be enough to give you the symptoms. New thinking on daily food goals. Stop aiming for a particular amount of servings in each food category and focus on total daily intake. Trying to hit the mark on a healthy diet can be challenging. You need to eat enough of the right foods to meet your body's vitamin and mineral needs. Experts have tried to guide us over the years by recommending goals of daily food servings, such as 5 to 8 servings of fruits and vegetables per day. But your idea of serving sizes may differ from someone else's. That's led to confusion and now change. Daily food goals. Dietary guidelines have shifted away from daily food goals measured in servings. Instead, they now focus on daily food totals that are measured in cups, ounces, or tablespoons. The daily goals depend on your health, sex, and age. For example, for moderately active adults ages 66 or older, men are advised to eat 2,200 calories per day. Women are advised to eat 1,800 calories per day. Here are the daily food goals for those diets. Vegetables, 2.5 to 3 cups. Aim for a variety of vegetables and try to include those with different colors for different phytonutrients, which are beneficial substances in plants. Suggests registered Harvard dietitian Kathy McManus. Go for dark leafy greens like spinach or kale, vibrant yellow squash, or bright red tomatoes or peppers. Legumes, such as peas or beans, are included in the goal for this food category. Fruits, 1.5 to 2 cups. Options include berries, peaches, cherries, kiwi, or other fruits. Whole grains, about 1/2 cup. The word whole should be the first ingredient listed when you are choosing breads, crackers, and cereals. Poultry, fish, or meat. 5 to 6 ounces, that's up to 42 ounces per week. Try to make 12 of those ounces seafood. Dairy, such as milk or yogurt, 3 cups, but the Harvard School Public Health disagrees. Research says that 1 to 2 servings, 1 to 2 cups of milk or yogurt, is sufficient to achieve good health, says Teresa Fung, who's adjunct professor in the Department of Nutrition at Harvard. Healthy oils, 1 to 2 tablespoons. Choose oils such as olive, peanut, canola, or avocado. Making it work. You may think it's going to be hard to eat all those cups of food each day. It actually is not when you spread it throughout the day and include fruits and vegetables whenever you eat, Fung says. Keep track of your food goals by using measuring cups or just eyeballing amounts to see measuring made simple. Or simply follow Harvard's Healthy Eating Plate, which helps you meet daily goals with healthy, balanced meals. Fill half your plate with fruits and vegetables, 1/4 with whole grains, and 1/4 with proteins such as fish, chicken, beans, or nuts. Make it an interesting mix. Sprinkle beans, nuts, and seeds in salads. Add sautéed vegetables such as zucchini or tomatoes to an omelet. Make a smoothie with berries, seeds, and bananas. It's a fun and easy way to build toward your daily goals, and the reward is good health. Measuring made simple. You don't always have to use measuring cups and spoons to track how much food you're eating. Use everyday objects to gauge amounts. For example, 3 ounces of fish or poultry are about the size of a deck of cards. 1 cup of cooked vegetables, chopped fruit, yogurt, whole grain pasta, or brown rice is about the size of a baseball. A 2-tablespoon serving of peanut butter is about the size of a ping pong ball. 1 tablespoon of dressing is about the size of a poker chip. Diagnosing heart trouble, the Mayo Clinic health letter, the right test for you. On television and in the movies, the process of diagnosing a heart attack is typically a fast tempo process that takes place in the emergency department. This certainly can occur, but diagnosing the most common cause of a heart attack, coronary artery disease, can also occur in urgent but non-life-threatening settings, or even in a relaxed clinic environment when you don't think that your symptoms are due to your heart. The history. As the name suggests, coronary artery disease occurs in the arteries that supply the heart with blood. It's a process in which the inner layers of the arteries are damaged, and over time deposits or plaques made of fats, cholesterol, calcium, and other substances tend to accumulate at specific sites in the coronary arteries. This process is called atherosclerosis. It narrows heart arteries and reduces or sometimes eventually blocks blood flow to the heart muscle. In addition, plaques can tear and rupture, triggering blood clot development that can suddenly block blood flow. If blood flow to part of the heart is reduced significantly, you may notice symptoms when you exert yourself, after eating, or when you are under emotional stress. These symptoms generally stop with rest, such as stopping an activity, or with relaxation. This is called angina, and it can be a warning sign of coronary artery disease with symptoms and possibly a warning sign of a total or near total artery blockage and heart attack. It is very concerning when symptoms become more frequent, last longer than about 15 to 20 minutes, occur with less exertion, or occur at rest. A diagnosis of angina or a heart attack might seem obvious. However, there are a number of conditions that often mimic classic coronary artery disease symptoms, including chest pain, pressure or tightness with pain that radiates to the shoulder, arm, neck, jaw, back, or abdomen. Moreover, symptoms are not always typical and may not include any chest pain. This is particularly true for older adults, women, and those with diabetes. Atypical symptoms may involve neck, shoulder, jaw, or abdominal discomfort, shortness of breath, unusual weakness or fatigue, lightheadedness or dizziness, sweating or clamminess, nausea or vomiting, and mental confusion. First steps. When you arrive at a health care facility with suspected or discovered coronary artery disease, with any of these symptoms, it sets in motion a process to clearly diagnose the problem and identify the scope. The level of urgency this task takes on will vary depending on your symptoms and condition, but steps may include obtaining a health history. The suspicion of coronary artery disease rises if you have arteriosclerosis risk factors, which includes a personal family history of heart disease, tobacco products, older age, obesity, having high blood pressure, undesirable cholesterol levels, or diabetes. A physical exam and discussion of your specific symptoms can guide early diagnosis decisions. Tests to rule out or confirm a variety of potential problems, a chest x-ray, blood test, blood pressure monitoring, and a fingertip clip to measure the oxygen saturation in your blood are examples of testing that may be done to narrow the diagnostic possibilities. A troponin blood test is particularly useful in diagnosing a heart attack. Levels of the substance in the blood climb soon after heart muscle is damaged due to a lack of blood flow and remain elevated for up to 10 days. Electrocardiogram, ECG. This is typically one of the first tests used to evaluate a suspected heart problem. For this, electrodes are placed on your chest to record your heart's electrical impulses. If you are having symptoms in coronary artery disease as the cause, certain findings on the EKG or ECG can confirm or increase the probability. Sometimes an ECG can even identify the part of the heart that's affected. An ECG test while exercising. If you're symptom-free at rest, your ECG may be normal. A stress test recording your ECG during exercise may be needed to capture a reading in the situation which symptoms occur or in the heart muscles under stress. With an exercise stress ECG, you walk on a treadmill at increasing increments of speed, incline, or both. At the same time, an ECG records how your heart responds to the increased workload and demand for oxygen-rich blood. A stationary bicycle stress test can sometimes be used for people who can't walk on a treadmill. ECG, an imaging stress test using a drug, pharmacologic stress test. If an exercise stress test can't be performed, there are several drugs that can be safely used to mimic the effects of exercise or stress on the heart. And then stress tests with imaging. This type of test is commonly used when pharmacological test is performed. We'll continue this. It's important, so I'll continue reading next week about diagnosing heart trouble. Because we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week, and we hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time, if you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138. And just a reminder that you have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Stay healthy.